Môre almal. Ek gaan nie hierdie ding gebruik nie, ek het hom net gebring van nieuwsgierigheid vir julle. Ek kan ek hom bere. Ek gaan hom dwing. If we all concentrate on it, it won't slide. Oh, you of little faith. You guys, do you remember some years ago there was a guy called Jesse Duplantis? And he tells a hilarious story about before he came to faith. He says he really enjoyed his sin. And he found it was getting more and more difficult to sin. And he realized what was going on in his life. So he picked up the telephone and he phoned his mother. And he said, "Mama, you all praying?" And she answered, yes, we're praying for you. He says, "Well, quit praying." And he became a Christian after that, you know, because his mother's prayers got his conscience going. Sy gewete, you know, and his conscience started criticizing him. So I've got a number of little concepts that I'm fiddling with. And Rita, thank you very much for being a sounding board. I think I drive her mad sometimes, you know, with stuff that I start thinking about, you know. So yesterday I said to her, before the fall, did Adam and Eve have a conscience? And she was quiet for quite a long time. She said, "Yeah, of course they had a conscience." I said, so then my next knockout question was, "What for?" And so in that kind of trant, you know, I was wondering that the purpose of your conscience. Paul tells us sometimes it'll accuse you and sometimes it'll approve of you. But for Adam and Eve, did they need a conscience? Yeah. So I hope I've given you something that's going to keep you awake tonight. Not that it's too important, I don't believe. I actually want to speak about freedom. And this is another concept that I've been thinking about, because obviously there are different types of freedom. And as I am going to use the toy, I'm going to show you that there are degrees of freedom. And there are distinct different types of freedom. And I think one of the clearest ones that you could find is you could make a distinction between freedom as defined by the world and the freedom that is defined by He who said, "If I make you free, I make you free indeed." So the world says that freedom is the power or the right to act, to speak, or to think as you want, with no hindrance, no restraint, or no external imposition. That's the classic definition of freedom. Maak wat jy wil. Sê wat jy wil. Dink wat jy wil. The only restraints that you've got on that freedom is your ability or your resources to indulge yourself with, or your capacity for that thing. There are no barriers, there are no obstacles, there are no constraints. And I wanted to find a nice Afrikaans word for a constraint. It's similar to a restraint. A constraint and a restraint are the same sort of thing. And the closest I could find was a beperking. Of een dwang. For a constraint. I want to flesh out this word a little bit, this constraint, because I think that it's important. And how it ties into degrees of freedom. Dis mos grade van vergelyking vir vryheid. Okay. And I want to make the argument also that every time you indulge your worldly freedom, you bond yourself, bind yourself, put yourself into slavery more and more and more. Because I think it's clear that you can identify this worldly freedom that I've just described to you as being something that is very, very far away from Christian freedom. Tiny little example. You cannot say what you please. Guard your tongue. Your tongue makes fire. Your tongue is like that little thing at the back of a ship. It turns this mighty ship in a direction. You see, politicians these days, the horrible things that they say to each other and about each other and to each other. So every time you indulge your worldly freedom, you are enslaving yourself more to a system. So in fact, this is not a freedom. This freedom to do as you please, when you please, and how you please. Surely it can't work. And even mixing the two, I believe, is dangerous. I'm going to speak about Christian freedom, obviously. Now, in terms of conscience, gewete, and for Alfred at the back, unembeza. Conscience, say Alfred. Unembeza. I use a computer program called Autodesk Inventor, and it's a three-dimensional drawing package where you can design things on it. And so all of our machines come through Autodesk Inventor. And basically, if you've ever done a 2D sketch in your life, you draw a square, and then with Inventor, you add a third dimension to it. You can make a part out of it. And you can do it with round things. You can build anything with it. And so you can simulate everything that you need to do. In my job, I mean, I use this thing on a daily basis, and I try and make all of my mistakes on the computer screen before I actually commit the machine into the workshop. And I get so involved with this thing that I am physically hunched up trying to climb into the screen with it. And it's an infinite 3D space that's inside the screen. So it's like being out in deep, deep, deep space. And when I assemble a thing, when I start designing a thing, I have to restrain these parts because otherwise they're going to fly off into 3D space. If I don't constrain these parts and these bits and pieces while I'm virtually building a machine, they suddenly vanish. And whole assemblies vanish. Whole parts of it. And I honestly get anxious. I get into this, it's almost a fear. Where have these things gone? And I'm physically inside this place. And I feel like I am lost as well. And I'm looking around to find my parts. And there's a little button that you can press that includes everything in your universe onto one screen. And you see a tiny little pixel dot way down there, and another one way down there, because your thing has just exploded. It's gone all over the place. These parts that I've built are completely unconstrained. They are free to go where they like, do what they like, say what they like, whatever. They have completely escaped my authority. And there is a complicated process, but there is a way of bringing them back, but it happens. And sometimes a whole assembly just explodes into 3D space. And if you had to take it in a scaled way, they're kilometers away from where I started the thing. And this toy is quite a good illustration. It's a bit moth-eaten, but it has entertained lots of children and a dog. So what I do first of all is I make this thing. But I will go in and I will tell my computer to attach this base at a certain place in 3D space. And a good safe place to do it is on the origin, where everything is naught. So I'll go and put this thing on naught. And after that, I will take all the other parts and I will constrain them onto this thing. One, in whatever order I like to. So today I might do it like this, and then tomorrow, anyway, you get the drift. And what I've done now is I've constrained this thing up and down on this stick, and it can turn this way and that way. I can do lots of combinations of this thing. Or I can fully constrain them so that they're fully bound onto this thing and can't go anywhere. Okay. Now, my purpose with this thing is that these things should all be fully constrained, and they should have this as a head on the top. And this thing is perfectly safe, and whatever purpose I intended for this thing, it now functions for that purpose. Another little example. I can take a guitar. I can take a guitar and I can put strings on it. And I can beat that guitar as much as I like, and music won't come out of it. Until I have tensioned each and every string perfectly to a certain pitch. And then I have spent at least 10,000 hours such that I can master that instrument. So I've constrained myself. I've restrained myself. I haven't been out there going doing whatever I want to do. I've sat there for 10,000 hours to master this instrument. I've restrained myself. With a combination of all of these things together, I've got a guitar and I've got the strings and I've tuned all the strings correctly. Now I'm free to make beautiful music with this thing. I can go to that piano right now. I don't think I even remember where middle C is on a piano. And I could stand on it and I could drive all of you out of here with a terrible noise that I made in with that piano. But according to the world, I'm perfectly free to go and do that. So, Christian, are you free? Are you free indeed? Romans 6 says, and I paraphrase, says something is going to be your master. You will serve something, all humanity, you will serve something. It'll either be the system out there, what they call freedom, or it'll be yourself that you serve, or the devil, or whoever, but you're going to serve somebody. And as soon as you are serving somebody or something, you are constraining yourself to that thing. And Paul has this paradox in Romans 6. He says, you were once a slave to sin, but now you are slaves to righteousness. So in other words, you are fully constrained to Jesus. You no longer have the desire or the requirement to subcontract your conscience out. This is another little concept that I really like the idea. This one of subcontracting your conscience. Because so often you don't want to bother to find out yourself. What would Jesus do? What did God say? And so you'll take elements, and now you're starting to mix bits of the world. You're taking elements of the world and you're mixing them up with what you should know. That's quite heavy, eh? You should know. I should know. You can't mix the two. So you can be free, and you can be free indeed. You can be free of your own conscience. And you can be free of the world's constraints on you. The world's got no more handbrake on you because you have chosen to constrain yourself to the author and the perfecter of your faith. And therein lies your freedom. Your conscience will no longer accuse you. And I'm sure, I think, you know, like Jesse Duplantis, lying there at night, unable to sleep because his conscience won't let him sleep. His mother's praying for him. His conscience has got him. Opposed to the person who knows that the Lord is my God and his statutes are correct for me. And your soul is liberated by this. And the binding force of this constraint on a Christian is love. I think it's a delightfully simple glue. You know, it's doesn't take much to understand the glue of love in the body of Christ. Taking your thoughts captive, we heard it mentioned earlier on. Taking your thoughts captive becomes a thing that you are empowered to do. You don't have to follow the world. I want to read from Romans 6, the scripture that I've just mentioned, and from Galatians, I think it's 5. What then? Shall we sin because we are not under law but under grace? By no means. Don't you know that when you offer yourselves to somebody to obey him as slaves, you are slaves to the one you obey? Whether you are slaves to sin, which leads to death, or to obedience, which leads to righteousness. But thanks be to God that though you used to be slaves to sin, you wholeheartedly obeyed the form of teaching to which you were entrusted. I constrain myself to that teaching. You, my brothers, were called to be free, but don't use your freedom to indulge your sinful nature. Rather, serve one another in love. The entire law is summed up in a single command: love your neighbor as yourself. And if you keep on biting and devouring each other, watch out, or you will be destroyed by each other. And that warning that happens is, as soon as the world starts exercising its freedom to say what it likes, do what it likes, without hindrance or without restraint, what's happening? Just chaos and destruction. That's all you see around us. As people are becoming more and more hysterical about exercising their rights and their freedoms. I actually don't have anything else to say. May I be excused? Yeah. Just an announcement, please, if I may. Rita and I are very interested in studying the new AI revolution that's happening and how particularly it impacts on us and our lives. And just by way of a little example, once again, just something to tease your head with. China has got a declining population. They had very, very tight population controls for many years. And they've got an aging population, and they're not replacing themselves. In other words, they're not having children. And they're trying all sorts of incentives, but the Chinese are not buying. Okay. So they have a problem because they don't want migrants in their country. So they are automating, and so the whole world is also automating to try and keep up with China. And they've now got about, by the BBC, I'm quoting them, they've got 2 million robot arms on their production lines. And some of those production lines are making more robots. So AI is using robots to make more robots. Such that eventually, you know, the aim is by a certain time in the future, the entire production process in China, they're aiming at having it completely automatic in dark factories. They don't even have lights in them, where these things are manufacturing. So for the rest of the world, if we are making more and more stuff and there are less and less people that have got jobs, jobs give you money, and money you can buy things. So now we've got this thing where we're making more and more stuff, but less and less people have got money. What's going to happen? So this is just a thing, and I think that it's quite valuable that we as Christians should be, in the words of Paul in 1 Thessalonians 4, he says, "But brothers, you will not be caught unawares." And once again, to be responsible as a Christian, I think you need to know what the word says, so that you don't subcontract your conscience. And you need to, I believe that we need to know what the Bible and what prophecy is saying at the same time. Thank you very much.